Work it, make it, do it. Makes us harder, better, faster, stronger.
Richardson, the running back. They give it to him over the right side. Dives. He's in. Touchdown, Trent Richardson.
Weaver looking right corner of the end zone. Throws. Touchdown, Jordan Cameron.
What a beautiful throw.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio. This is Cleveland Browns Daily. Driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Weaver the throw. He's going to go long. Looking long for Gordon. He's out there. He's got it. 10-5. Touchdown. No doubt about it.
And now, here are your hosts, Vic Carucci and Nathan Zagora.
All right. Your CBD team is actually in two locations today. Yours truly, Vic Carucci, out here at the PNC Bank tailgate party in Menor. We are at 7940 Plaza Boulevard for our second PNC Bank tailgate event. I'll be here for the duration of the show. Travis Benjamin is going to join me out here in about a half an hour or so. He'll be signing autographs, posing for pictures. So come on out and join us. We've got tents set up. We've got interactive games set up. We'll have refreshments for you, food, drink. Got to come out. Got to come out and join us here in Menor. And then back in the Dog Bowl, back in Berea, is Nathan Zagora. Nathan, how we doing?
You know, better than yesterday, because it's time to, I think, to look forward a little bit to week number two, and the Browns have a chance to get an edge up in a division that struggled in week number one. But, you know, I miss you, bro. I know you're out there. It's sunny. It's a great day for people to come out there. So everybody go out there and see old Notorious V.I.C.
Yeah, I know. I definitely like it better when we're in the same place, but we'll make this work. We did it last Friday for the Paint the Town Browns event that we had at the PNC Bank in Strongsville. So we're keeping this thing rolling along here in Menor. And you're right. A day removed from, you know, the ugliness of Sunday is what we're going to deal with. And we're still going to have to talk about that.
Sure.
Still going to pour through that a little bit. But like you said, more of a look ahead, more to what the Browns can do to redeem themselves, to rebound against the Ravens. We're going to hear from T.J. Ward a little bit later in this show, Jameer Howerton sitting down with him. And he also sat down with, you used the word notorious, a guy who became notorious in one game for the Browns, O'Neal Cousins, the guard who struggled mightily at right guard last week, four penalties and just kind of getting overmatched throughout that game. We'll hear what O'Neal Cousins had to say about what took place on Sunday and, again, how they're going to improve on that. And that's the story of this week, Nathan, is how this team gets better in a hurry.
And that's what they've got to do. They have got to improve. And sometimes it's easier said than done, right? We knew that there was perhaps a talent deficiency, obviously, at the right guard position. We saw struggle from O'Neal Cousins. Now, hopefully, I think the guy that's more important to get right this week is Mitchell Schwartz at the tackle position. Mitchell Schwartz obviously had his hands full with Cameron Wake in the first week. He gave up three sacks. He gave up two quarterback hits and four quarterback hurries. He was actually, according to Pro Football Focus, the 62nd ranked tackle out of 65 in week one, according to their grading scale. So we want to see Mitchell Schwartz step up, because the challenge does not get any easier. Elvis Dumervil, Terrell Suggs for the Baltimore Ravens, and Brandon Whedon, as much as people want to throw things at him, it is impossible to play quarterback in this league when you're hit 16 times, sacked another six times. Were there opportunities for Whedon to make plays? Absolutely. But I think it starts with the guys up front, because that will give Whedon the time to throw, the confidence to step up in the pocket, and it will also help get this ground game going. Trent Richardson, just 13 carries in week one. And when you look back at what he did against the Baltimore Ravens last year, Trent Richardson was not a guy who touched the ball 15 times. In fact, against the Baltimore Ravens last year, Trent Richardson was really a featured part of this offense, averaging basically 24 and a half touches and 120 total yards. That's what you need from Trent Richardson this week.
Yeah, Nathan, a couple of things that we can chew on from what we heard yesterday from head coach Rob Chudzinski. One, making a point to say that Brandon Whedon was not on a short leash. He did not want to use that term to describe Whedon's status after a game in which he throws three interceptions and has a poor outing. I think some of that is because of what you pointed out as well. He wasn't the lone reason for his own struggles and the struggles of the passing game. He was a big part of it. I can't absolve him of blame for struggle. And I think to say, no, it was all because he was poorly protected, all because receivers didn't get enough separation, all because Josh Gordon wasn't there, I think that's erroneous. Quarterbacks have to make plays, have to step
Agreed.
Up. Okay. But I think the head coach is cutting him some reasonable slack just to the extent that, look, you've got to have other things helping you out. But I think here's the main reason why the head coach of this team can't start the short leash conversation right now. What else are the Browns going to do? The answer is still, to them, Brandon Whedon until further notice. And then the question after that is, when is further notice? When do you reach a point of saying, okay, it's just not going to happen with this guy? And I know, I think that's a premature discussion after one game, but it's a thought that is floating out there. When does this team have to say to itself, hey, we've got to do something different, and a head coach is obligated to do that? I think we would both know, even though Rob Chudzinski is not going to go there, is not going to broach that subject now, nor should he. The rest of us are going to look at that and say, you know, yeah, it's really early to go there, but at some point the leash could get short. At some point the Browns would have to do something to turn this around. You can't ignore the way this thing started for the passing game, and you can't ignore three interceptions for a guy who threw 17 last year.
I would say two of those interceptions were questionable. One was certainly not his fault, and the other one I would say was questionable that it was completely his fault. I think that it's definitely premature to start talking up like that. This is one game. Tom Brady averaged 5.5 yards per attempt. Tom Brady had 2 turnovers in week one. I know he's done it before, yeah, but I'm just saying
he gets the pass. He's
people have bad games, though. People have bad games. I would just say it is way premature to think about that. That's something that will be decided at the end of this season. Let's focus, to me, on the 2013 Cleveland Browns, and Brandon Whedon is the quarterback of that team. What do you get by going to Jason Campbell? Absolutely nothing. So to me, it's a moot discussion. It doesn't even matter. If they want to make a switch to Jason Campbell at some point, that would say to me, and would say, I would imagine, to everybody listening to the show, that we absolutely do not care about this year. Forget about it. Jason Campbell's not a playoff quarterback. Let's be honest. Look at his resume.
Yeah, no, I'm with you in terms of what statement that would make. Again, I think it's the dire sense, that desperation sense of wanting to see something more, wanting to see something different. But he's on trial. He's in a different spot. The year has been kind of given or devoted to seeing what they have in him.
Right.
But I guess the question becomes, when do you know what you have or you don't have? And the judgments are going to come harshly on a game-to-game basis. He really, Nathan, has to at least go down to Baltimore in very tough circumstances and come out of that game with an efficient showing. I'm not sitting here optimistically expecting the Browns to go in and get win one of the season in Baltimore. I had that one marked off as a loss, and there's nothing that's going to change my mind on that, particularly because I think the Ravens are going to be with extra time to prepare and extra time to stew on how embarrassing their opener was. They're going to be in rare form for that opening game, and celebrating the fact that they, you know, are the defending Super Bowl champs. All of that good stuff is going to be going on in M&T Stadium Sunday. But Brandon Whedon has to give us signs of efficiency. Of, you know, we talk about, okay, whose fault are all those interceptions? Hey, Rob Chudzinski acknowledged he's got to take something off that fastball. Did that contribute to it? Does the ball coming in any hotter than it should? Receivers still got to make the catch and can't let balls clang off their fingers. But it's up to the quarterback to make those throws through those tighter windows that receivers can catch. And yeah, we could debate over who's, you know, how much help he's getting or not getting, but as I look at it, those weren't the only reasons that you look at his performance as dubious against the Dolphins. There were a lot of decisions that I think that could have been better. There were times that he just, when he had time, didn't do the best. He was off the mark on multiple throws. And again, we want to see this guy look efficient, look like most of the balls that he puts out there are catchable.
Let me ask you this, because I feel like I don't understand quite the tenor of just this all, it's all Brandon Whedon's fault. I don't think that that is reasonable, and I don't think that if he came out and threw for 330 yards and had 3 touchdowns, would we be saying he's the future of this franchise? This is a 16-game evaluation as I see it. That means we have been through exactly 6.7% of the evaluation on Brandon Whedon as a regular season starter. Now, I would also put an asterisk by both of these two games without Josh Gordon for if I were evaluating Brandon Whedon. Again, everybody's entitled to their own prerogative. negative as far as evaluating him. Am I saying that Brandon Whedon is the future of the franchise? No. I think that there should be time, and I think to kind of go over it week to week and be so judgmental when he had wide receivers who I don't think were making plays for him. Obviously, he missed some throws. We know that. But he still did enough to get Jordan Cameron 9 catches, over 100 yards, and a touchdown on 13 targets. He did efficient with that. I just think that it's the negativity. There are a lot of things that were bad. I mean, are we going to all of a sudden say that, you know, you got to get rid of the right side of the offensive line? You have to get rid of the second and third and fourth cornerbacks on this team. I think it's premature to say things like that after 1 week. Trent Richardson did not have a great game. I don't think we're having a referendum on him just yet. I understand it's the quarterback, and you say you win and you lose with the quarterback, but the three interceptions that keep being cited all happened in the first half. The Cleveland Browns went to halftime ahead 7-6. So they were not detrimental in the sense that they put the team behind the eight ball going into the half. Brandon Whedon is probably not one of the 20 best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. He might not even be one of the 24 best quarterbacks in the NFL right now. But let's see what he does in a system that it should be ultimately suited to his skills when he gets all his pieces in place. And let's not take things away, which I think we are doing, from the fact that the Miami Dolphins have a phenomenal defense. And now you do have to play good defenses in the NFL. But the Dolphins are a very good defense. Was it the start Brandon Whedon wanted? No. Was it the start that anybody else watching Brandon Whedon wanted? Absolutely not. But I think the overreaction that this is all Brandon Whedon's fault is, to use your word, notorious, totally erroneous. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm not going to put it all on him for sure, but I understand the harsh judgments, and they're not going to go away, no matter how much you recite what you've recited, and there's logic to what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing
with your logic. What's the point of it?
The point of it is quarterbacks are playmakers. The point of it is the Browns are still coming up empty in the search for their guy. When you see other teams perform, when you see other quarterbacks deliver under also duress and circumstances, you want that. You want the guy who's going to be your playmaker, and that's what defines what you are in this league. When you have issues at receiver, either suspension or injuries or you're shuffling your deck, your quarterback still comes through for you if everything kind of works together along with scheme and everything else, and we don't see it yet. I mean, we saw signs of it in the preseason. What we saw Sunday didn't look like a guy who was running that system that we're expecting to help elevate his game. Didn't
Agreed.
Look like the guy who has been influenced in ways that we think could make him a better passer, a more accurate thrower. And then those things are still question marks. I wanted to see more signs that this is hopeful. We lost that Sunday. We lost that. It doesn't mean it's lost forever, but we're still looking to get that part accomplished. And then I think the other part of this thing, and people will go here. I'm going here just because it's football conversation. But what we saw last night, I'll tell you what, the NFL was put on notice by Chip Kelly and the offense that he's brought to Philadelphia. That was an amazing display. The Oregon Ducks offense wearing the Kelly Green of the Philadelphia Eagles and doing it right. I mean, Michael Vick running this thing for a half, wearing down 15 to 17 seconds between plays, and the Washington Redskins defense gassed throughout that first half, and enough was done, and the Redskins contributed to it with a very shaky and rusty RG3 at quarterback for them, understandably not playing in the preseason. But, man, that was fun to watch.
It was a lot of fun to watch. I was actually talking to Brian Westbrook during the game, and he's like, man, this would make – he said, I couldn't even imagine what I'd be able to do in an offense like that. And LeSean McCoy looked phenomenal. Vic looked great. I do think at some point defenses will adjust to what they're doing, but, you know, for the very first game, it was like watching a video game, and it certainly was a lot of fun to see there. And, yeah, it was fun. I watched that game most of the time with a smile on my face because you're watching this thing and you're saying, what in the world is going on? And, granted, it slowed down the second half, and I think Washington even made in-game adjustments that helped out there, but you know, it was pretty remarkable in the first half when they looked like they were going to run 100 plays in the game.
Yeah, I mean the pacing of it and the fact that the Redskins were not only didn't have the personnel they wanted on there, but the personnel they had on there they were awestruck. They were in shock. It was the shock and awe effect that the Eagles offense presented, and it never let up. And you saw Chip Kelly running things at this incredible pace. And I was impressed that for a team that didn't show any of that in the preseason, but clearly worked on it in practice, clearly has the right people to do it. You know, can every team do it and run it that way? Not necessarily. I think you've got to take the time to understand it, but you also have the right personnel, especially the right quarterback, to make it happen. And I think they do in Michael Vick. I'm with you that maybe at some point defenses do catch up, but when do they catch up? A lot of coordinators spent this offseason on the whole pistol read option type offense. That isn't what that was last night. That was a pacing thing. That was, I mean, at one point you had a center, you had a center and two guards, and the tackles flanked out. I mean, there were a couple of different, not many crazy looks, but a couple of looks like that that made you say, wow, football, the NFL version of football got a whole new look last night, and it was fun and pretty amazing. You call us up, 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. As I mentioned, yours truly, Vic Carucci, out here at the PNC Bank in Mentor. On Plaza Boulevard in Mentor. People are coming out for our tailgate party, the second of our PNC Bank tailgate parties, our partner with the Browns. You also tweet us, by the way, at Browns_daily.
Let me hop in and say one thing about the Dog Bowl in Berea.
I just wanted to set us up. Go ahead, buddy.
You are the man. Let me hop in and say one thing about that Eagles team, though. The one thing that concerns me more than anything about that offense when I watched it, how are they going to survive 16 games? Michael Vick is not going to survive 16 games in that offense.
Robert Griffin III didn't even barely survive the first game, running a different style of offense, but a guy who physically, and he's coming back from the knee.
Right.
I hear what you're saying, Michael Vick, but that you'd say that about Michael Vick in any scheme, though.
Totally, but I mean, he was already getting a little bit banged up, and I love LeSean McCoy, but I think to ask a running back to carry the ball 30 times a game in today's NFL is going to be tough.
Wait a minute. I think a lot of Browns fans wanted to see
Trent Richardson carry
the rock 30 times Sunday and weren't happy about that.
I think the assumption with that was that it would change and go back to a little bit more balance once Josh Gordon returned. But with this Philadelphia Eagles offense, I mean, if they're going to run 80 or 90 plays a game and they want to run the ball the majority of the time, you were talking about 45 rushes a game.
Yeah, I understand the pace.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. I'll tell you what, there was very little that I saw in that game that made me think they couldn't keep this thing rolling, because they kept it rolling pretty well. But I'm with you. We're all, hey, we saw something new. And then typically as you watch the NFL, you look for the antidote. 216-578-0850, we have got Bennett in Long Beach, California on the line. Hey, Bennett. Oh, he dropped? Okay, how about... both of them are off? Oh, Zaki Anasel is there. Hey, Zaki.
Yeah, I'm here. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. But, you know, I mean, I don't blame everything in terms of that loss on Brandon Whedon. But one thing is clearly obvious to me is that Brandon Whedon is not a playoff-level quarterback. You can teach mechanics. You can teach how to run plays. But there are certain things about the instinctual reactions of quarterbacks that you see in the top quarterbacks that you haven't seen and you won't see, because you can't teach instincts, how to look off the free safety, how to make the other team think the ball's going to the left side of the field when in fact it's going to the right. When you see a guy dropping back in the pocket and constantly looking exactly at the receiver he's going to throw the ball in, there's not a pro defense hardly in this whole league that won't be able to pick up and read that as the game progresses, and he just goes back naturally to what he's always done. That's not who you're looking for when you're talking about a playoff quarterback. We'll win a few games, which is good, but you better believe that the Browns organization are looking for somebody else to fill that spot. It might not be Jason Campbell, but they're going to find somebody else, because you can see it from day one. Those instincts you can't teach. That's just part of how that guy is, and you see it in all the top-level quarterbacks.
Okay. So, Keith, thank you for the call and the comments. He puts decent food for thought out there. It's got to play itself out, but there are those questions aren't answered. I mean, I couldn't tell him he was wrong on all.
No, I feel like I'm the person who's in some ways defending Brandon Whedon, but if you actually listen to everything I've said, I'm not sure he's one of the top 24 quarterbacks in the NFL right now. So
you've already said they've got to swap this guy out. You're already said there's no future for here when you're saying that.
With Brandon Whedon, I'm not sure.
When does top 25 turn into top even?
As of today, 15. If he can get into the top 16, I'm not sure. I don't think that there's anything on his resume at this point where we stand today through 17 games of Brandon Whedon that would say he's anywhere ranked higher than that. You can't make that comment, but everything is not just based on past performance. So there is, I think he has the ability to move up in this Norv Turner offense when they get Josh Gordon back. But ultimately, the fact of the matter is a new quarterback is not coming to the Cleveland Browns in 2013.
No.
So right, Brandon Whedon's our guy for now.
Live with it.
Let's live with it, and we're going to have the ups and downs. And I think that if you all feel that way and things continue the way that, let's say, that they started, there's no question that Brandon Whedon will not be the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns in 2014. This is a guy, as we said in the preseason, who is playing for his career in the National Football League. And I believe that. I don't think he's playing for his career with the Cleveland Browns. I think he's playing for his career as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. He's not a spring chicken, and teams aren't going to start over with him.
As a starting quarterback, I'm glad you prefaced that, because as bereft as this league is and thin as this league is at the quarterback position, he's got time ahead to at the very least be someone's backup if it doesn't work out here. And I'm not saying it's over. I'm just saying the climb. I'm looking at the hill. The hill's pretty high. It's a high. That much we'll agree on. This hill is steep.
How much different would you have felt, or do you think anybody listening would have felt, if he comes out in the first game and say throws for 270 with two touchdowns, one interception?
They would have felt a hell of a lot better than they do now. You would have seen efficiency, the three picks and the loss and the absence of anything offensively that really looked promising is the problem, Nathan. The other one would have changed the discussion, and you would have said, okay, the progress line's moving. You just want to see the line kind of going in an upward direction.
Like the elevator we saw.
It didn't necessarily. I don't know that it went down. In some people's mind, it did. I've heard people describe it as his worst game. I thought I saw him play worse than that. But when you're hearing those types of descriptions, that's a problem. All right, hey, we're going to hear next from TJ Ward, safety for the Browns. He sat down with Jameer Howerton. So we're going to bring you that, and we'll talk about that coming up on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, this Football Tuesday edition. Yours truly, Vic Carucci, out at the PNC Bank in Mentor, Plaza Boulevard in Mentor. Come on out and see us here. Interactive games, food, refreshments. So come hang out at the PNC Bank tailgate party. Nathan Zagura is back in Berea, and we are going to have much more for you on ESPN 850 WKNR. Here we come, right back where we started from.